I've given myself a challenge this year, and I'm reading through the Bible and writing notes. And I wanted to write little notes, that things that jumped out at me. Do you know what I mean? Like you read a chapter and you think, oh yeah, oh look at that, and then you write a note down. Problem is, as you read a chapter, I end up praising it, writing it all out almost myself, and it's like, ah, it's too much. Each chapter is taking up, you know, I'm writing too much detail, and I only wanted the things that stood out. But as you read it, you think, oh yeah, that's interesting. Oh, that's interesting. And in the end, I'm rewriting the Bible. Well, not rewriting it, but writing it myself. And it's not what I meant to do. And so I'm got a book like this, but I've got too much in it. And when I go, if ever I go and look back over my notes, I'll have too much, and it'll do my head in. Anyway, what's the title? My own revelation or relationship of God could be mine or somebody else's, and I'll try and work through this. Well, something like that. Is it a terrible title? We'll it's kind of grown. It's grown. Oh, Pracy, that's my note. No, that is my Pracy. It's terrible. Anyway, let's have a look. I'm going to start in Genesis 11. And yeah, work through the Bible. It's almost like it. Genesis 11, verse 31. Let me just bash through this a little bit. Terah took his son Abram, his grandson Lot, son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, the wife of his son Abraham. And together they set out from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to Canaan. So that let me make this up. We're going. So that's like me being, or someone being called from here to go to Ireland. Okay, we're going to look at it from that, to go to Canaan. But when they came to Haran, so when they came to Gloucester or Wales, they stopped. So they didn't quite get to Ireland, did they? If you know your geography. If you don't know your geography, well, it's not quite Ireland if you got as far as Wales or somewhere like that. Yeah, that's right, but they got stuck there. Perhaps the ferries weren't sailing. Anyway, he got stuck there, and they settled there. It says they settled there. And then jumping into chapter 12. The Lord had said to Abram, leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. That's a kind of little slice of prophecy for something extra special at the end there. Yeah? All nations will be blessed through you. And if you look around us here in this room, there's people from all over the world being blessed from this blessing here. Yeah? It's affected, well, all over the world. So Abraham left as the Lord had told him. And they went with his family, just his local family. And they went, all the possessions they had accumulated and the people they had acquired in Haran. And they set out for the land of Canaan, and they arrived there. Abraham traveled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Moreh, or Shechem. That became his kind of base. The Canaanites were there at the time. But the Lord appeared to Abraham and said, to your offspring I will give this land. So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. And so Abraham, I wonder here if his father had a similar encounter with God. You know, go to Canaan. Because it says that he set out to Canaan and only got halfway. Didn't quite get there. And he kind of came to a town and probably thought, this is all right here, I'll settle here. And he settled. He didn't get to the land that he was called to. But Abraham God spoke to Abraham. God, perhaps, we don't hear that he talked to his father, but he talks to Abraham and says, go, and I will make you into a nation. And as we go through these chapters, which I'm not going to do, we see this sort of relationship with God and Abraham building. And this is going back a long time now. This is way before Jesus. This is a long time before Jesus. This is the beginning of the people of Israel. And this is how it started. And Abraham has a calling, a vision. He's going to this land. And he's going to be called a great nation. Well, of course, there he is. He just walks into this land. How does it affect him? Well, it affects him, number one, is he has to go there. He goes there. He lives there. He gets it, and he lives in a tent. They travel around like that, tent. And that's all he had to do. He didn't have to do much more than that. He traveled around. Oh, he had to do something else. He had to have children. Because if he's going to be a great nation, he had to have children. But that's all he had to do, serving God. His calling, his vision, was live in that land and have children. Yeah? Simple as that. It wasn't too complicated, was it? And that's what his calling was. And when I look around, me, you, in the stories that I'm going to share, we fit into that. We can put ourselves into various parts of this, of a calling. And you might say, oh, I've got a big calling on my life. But the calling is to know that Jesus died for you. You know, let's have that as a starter. Jesus died for you. There's a start. That's a good start. And he calls you to be salt and light. These are some simple callings that he's called us. But God has to be your God. And I'll just tell you a little bit about my family. My grandfather was a stretcher bearer in the First World War. So that's my grandfather. It was right back nearly 100 years ago. He was a stretcher bearer. Well, it would be 100 years ago. He stretcher bearer in the First War, carrying the dead people and broken people and injured people off the battlefield. That's what his role was. Somewhere in his youth, Jesus became a reality to him, my grandfather. Jesus became important to him. And it changed his life enough, because my granddad was an accountant. He could have gone on to make a good living and done that. But in his life, there would be nothing wrong with him being accountant. It's not a wrong thing, but God called him, and he ended up way back there, and his wife, as missionaries in Congo, the Belgian Congo, right in the middle of Africa. And they ended up his accountancy became useful out there, because he would have helped the mission accounts, so he did use it. But that wasn't I don't think that's necessarily what he went for. But actually, missionaries, they look for skills to take out there. You know, if you were a nurse, a doctor, dentist, teacher, that was good. A mechanic, you know, anything, go out and be a missionary, because you can help in that community. You're giving your time to that community. And so my grandfather and his wife went and served in Congo, let's just say 100 years ago. I know they were out there in the 1920s serving, so they would have been out there helping to teach about Jesus, but they probably taught people to read and write, set up schools, that kind of thing. And then while they were out there, my mother was born. In Congo, Belgian Congo. My mother was born out there, because my parents were living out there. And it was back in those days, you sailed from here. You didn't just fly out and you were out there in a few hours and you served for a couple of months and then you came back. You went out, you went, and you went. And you went and you lived in the whatever it was, the society you were in. And you were used to this society and you went and lived in that society. And you went for years until maybe at some point you'd have a get a chance to come back for a break. Maybe or maybe not, but you just lived there. Became your life. My mother was born out there. And when I look at the Abraham, we jump a bit. And eventually, somewhere along the way, I mean, he has a few children, but Isaac is born to him. Isaac is born. And Isaac is his son. And Isaac learns about dad's vision. Dad's vision is to have to go to this land of Canaan and become a people. And Isaac, yeah, that's my dad's come here and my dad talks to God. And that's my dad's vision. Is it Isaac's vision? Well, it could be dad's vision. Does it become Isaac's? And dad would say to Isaac, Isaac, God is going to bless you and you're going to become a nation. And this land is our land. And he could have said, yeah, yeah, dad, okay, nice one. And that could have been it. And what the point being is, somewhere along the way, Isaac had to adopt that father's vision, didn't he? It had to become his own. He couldn't just live in his dad's vision and then go off and do it, because otherwise the vision would fizzle out. And God was trying to build a nation, and Isaac had to take on dad's vision. And God spoke to Isaac and said the same thing to Isaac. And somewhere along that, Isaac had to respond to God speaking to him. And take it on. He couldn't just say, oh yeah, well that's dad's God. And I'm just tagging along. He would have for a time tagged along with dad's God. But somewhere along the way it became his life. And Abraham wouldn't let him marry anyone from around those areas because he wanted to keep it within the family, if you see. Anyway, and so my mother was born in the 1920s. And I know that my mother spent some of her youth growing up in Congo. And I know that she would have grown up. I went to the same school. I think she went to a school that I went to. She would have been one of the earliest people that ever went to it. It was a missionary school for kids. And it was in another country, and they send you across the border, and you went off there. And when my mum went to it, it had only just got started, and there were a handful of children in Zambia. So they went across the border in Zambia, and that was a day's journey to get to school. And she went to that school, and then when she was older, she came back to, I know that she spent some time in Britain, and I know she trained in Belgium, and then she went back as a missionary herself. She had adopted, just because her parents were Christians, it didn't mean that automatically she was going to be a Christian, did it? We have to adopt that ourselves. We have to choose to be. See, some people think just because you're a son of so-and-so, that's automatically what you be. And lots of people think that with religion. But it has to be a choice. It's a choice that we make. We can't just adopt. We can't just say, my dad was this, so I am this. It's a choice we make. And it's a choice that we have to walk in. And you know, as we live in life, you might think, well, you know, is it just because my parents were Christians and I'm a Christian or something like this? But it doesn't just automatically follow. And so my mother, she went to Congo as well. And she decided to follow Jesus in the same way that her parents did. And she was going to follow Jesus, and she wanted to do the same thing. And she would have come to a point where she'd have to say, is this Jesus relevant to me? Am I going to follow him? Am I going to put my life like my parents did? And she could say, well, actually, I don't fancy it. I fancy a little bit of luxury. I don't fancy going out there. But she decided to follow. And she decided to intertwine her life with Jesus' life. Yeah? And that's... And interestingly, you know, my mum went out to the Congo and she taught out there. So they taught children, youngsters, and gave them an education. And then those youngsters may have gone on to university. And it would be, that's a long way back for, you're talking of now, way back in the, you know, I don't know, the 50s and 60s, getting youngsters from the heart of Congo to go to university. And some of them are probably over here now. Well, they'd be quite old now. I know some are in Belgium running churches. And, you know, that spreads out, doesn't it? The knock-on effect. My auntie, her sister, was a midwife in Congo. And she took principles of... I remember them telling me a story that she started off the sort of making mums rest more, because I know out there they kind of have a baby and off they go. They, you know, it was a kind of hard life, I think, for women. So she was a midwife in Congo. So they decided, and as I look at this story, so Isaac, we have Isaac, followed on from Abraham. And then along comes another son. Along comes another son. And we don't have a great deal about Isaac. He has this kind of quiet life almost compared to Abraham and Jacob. Well, there's a lot about Jacob. He's a bit of a character. And I thought I'd look. And Jacob, now third generation, it's quite, you could start losing the vision, couldn't you? You could lose that vision of granddad. See, how many of us know much about our granddads? Do we know a lot about our granddads? Do we? I mean, I know a little bit about mine, and I've told you almost as much as I know in those few minutes. I know that he liked cricket. I know that he, you know, there's not a lot we know, is there? It's not a lot we know. We lose it. Fourth generation. I mean, what does Ed know about my granddad? What I've just heard this morning, I should think. It's lost, isn't it? And when we look at these, they had this vision that they had to bring on, this vision. And they could only do it if they connected with God. And when we get to Jacob, the next one, let me just read about Jacob. So we're going on to the third now. From Jacob 28, verse 10. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Now, what Jacob was doing, he was heading back to his old country, which was not where God was calling him. It's not for a bad reason. He's looking for a wife, which actually is what his parents would want, see. So it's fine. But he's heading the wrong way. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. Comfortable, isn't it? Pillow. Kipping out in the woods. Get a stone for a pillow. It's an awful night's sleep. No wonder he had his dream. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven. And the angels of God were going up and down on this stairway. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, and the God of Isaac. So he's building this. See, God says to him, I'm your granddad's God, and I'm your dad's God. And then he says, I will give you, and he resets it, I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on the earth will be blessed. Again, all peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. That's, and what we take that is, all the people will be blessed through Jesus. We are here because of this verse. blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place! This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. It's amazing, isn't it? And he has this encounter himself with God. So he encounters God. God becomes very real to him. So it's not, oh, well, I'm just doing what my dad did and I'm just doing what my granddad did. Now it's real to him. He has an encounter with God and he starts to intertwine very much the understanding of this. And early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he had placed under his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on top of it. He called that place Bethel. And these places that are marked in the Bible, they become very important in future times. You see all the places, and this is why I tried to write my little notes, because all these kind of places that they had this happened and that happened, and they put a stone, and later on they become important places in stories, and you read they reoccur. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey I am taken, and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear. It wasn't a great ask, was it? But hey-ho. So that I return safely to my father's house, then the Lord will be my God. So now, do you see that important word there? Then the Lord will be my God. So it's not my dad's God or my granddad's God. I have decided to follow. He's suddenly, at this point, it all becomes real to him, and he says, I'm going to follow. It's not just because of my mum or my dad. I want to follow. And if he looks after me, I'm going to follow him. And I just lost my place. Am I on 21? Excellent. So that I return safely, Lord, my God. This stone that I have set up as a pillar will be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will give you a tenth. It's just an interesting little point there. There's no verse there about giving a tenth of your earnings. He chose that. And that's where we get the idea of giving a tenth to God. So I didn't come to preach on giving a tenth, but I might as well throw it in there. There's no Bible verses that say for us, as in the church, we must give a tenth. But you wonder where it comes from. Well, it comes from people like Abraham earlier on. It comes from people like him, Jacob here, who says, whatever I get, I'll give a tenth to God. So when I earn £100, how much do I give? Tenner. If I get, never mind, I'm not going to go into math. I'll do myself. I've got to know the answer. And do we give a tenth to God, or do we make promises and not give a tenth to God? And there's just a little I'll throw that little challenge out. Does God mean enough to you that you would give a tenth to God, or is he just someone that you'll take what you can get when you can get it? And so it becomes real at this point. And it's those little things like that, those are the bits I was supposed to be writing my notes for. But I write too much. And I'm just going to jump on. And so with Jacob, various different things happened. And in his life, he goes off. Jacob's a very interesting life. And it's very hard to explain his life and the deception and trickery that went on in Joseph's life. Jacob's life. He was quite a trickster, and when you read his story, it's a good challenge to work it through, the things he got up to and was put up to by his mum and various things. Anyway, he gets tricked himself. So I don't know if he gets a taste of his own medicine, because he ends up with a couple of wives and a couple of concubines and a lot of children. goes back home, and the story goes on. And even, I'm just looking for it, chapter 46. You know, I keep jumping to Joseph, but Jacob, he knew where the vision was. He knew that the land of Canaan was theirs. And even towards the end, God says to him, go down to, it's all right to go to Egypt. Egypt is south of where, or just south west of the land that they were supposed to be in. And his son had gone to Egypt. It's another lovely story. But anyway, or it's not a lovely story if you're in the story. But anyway, he goes down there. But he knows his the calling is for Canaan. Why should I go to Egypt? I'm losing the vision. And God says to him, go on, it's all right to go. It's all part of the plan. You go down, and I will bring you all back. Go down to Egypt. I will make you a great nation. Joseph's own hand, that's his own, is the son he kind of particularly loved, by, you know, his biased love. Joseph's own hand will close your eyes, meaning that Jacob would die in Egypt. He would die in Egypt. He'd pass away in Egypt. But they would bring his body back up and bury it with his grandparents. Jacob, and then later, Jacob knew he was about to die, and he asked for his body to be taken and buried back in. Even on his death, he wanted to be buried in Canaan, because that was part of the vision. With his family. And as I look at my life, you know, third generation, I was actually, like my mum, I was born in Congo myself. And I spent my early years in Congo. And I went to school at the same school as my mum in Zambia. And as a child, I did what my parents, you know, I'm not, I don't mean I did what they told me to do. I wouldn't say I was a lovely child, but I mean, where they went, I had to go, didn't I? You know, where I went, when I read that, then I thought it makes me sound like I'm a little angel. No, I had to do. They took the choices on my life, didn't they? So where I went, you know, where they went, they, or where they sent me, I had to go. So when they sent me off to Zambia to school, I didn't want to go there, but I had to go, didn't I? And even if I tried to escape, you know, that's where I had to go as a five-year-old. And when they went to Wales, I went with them. I didn't think, oh no, I don't fancy it. I'll stay where I am, thanks. I'm old enough. I'm 8. I'll do my own thing, thanks. I had to do what they did, and the decisions they chose, I had to do. And then I grow up in my parents' religion. Is it relevant to me? You know, there's lots of stuff out there, isn't there? There's lots of other things. I could do my own thing. Maybe I should do my own thing. Maybe I could go off and have a life of my own. When I get old enough, when I'm 18, I can do my own thing, travel and hey-ho, get up to whatever I want. Perhaps their religion is the wrong one. These are thoughts you could have, isn't it? Perhaps their religion is the wrong one. Maybe they've got the, maybe my mum and dad got it wrong. And I could live for myself if I want. I could do my own thing. I could live for myself. And you have to think about these things. These are questions as youngsters. There's a few youngsters here. You've got to think about these things. And you older ones, like me, we have to pass on Jesus to our children. And you youngsters, you've got to choose to follow Jesus. Now then. You might think, but is it the right one? And you know, a little story recently, and Rue would probably tell it better than me. When we went up to watch Crystal Palace and Aston Villa, and we finished the game and we were travelling home. And we got to the railway station, going to the right platform, and there was a train there. And I was with Roo and this other lad. And Roo says, oh, that's our train. We can get on it. And I'm like, no, steady on. Could be the wrong train. And no, wait a minute. Let me look at the notice board. By the time I worked it out, it was the right train and it gone. And it was a fast train. I said, because when we got there, I'm like, it could be a slow one. It takes us ages. Let's catch a fast one. That was the fast one. And we missed it. The next train pulls in, stopping at every stop going, you know. I'm like, yes, we should have got on that one. And Roo wouldn't let me forget that. And so we had to wait then for the next fast one because we didn't want to get on the slow one. And so sometimes you are actually in the right place at the right time and you can jump on board. Or you can think, maybe it's the wrong one. Maybe there's something better out there. Maybe there's an even quicker one. But that is you're actually there at the platform now. In this place, shall we say. And you've come into contact with Jesus. And it is the right decision. Jump on the train. But you could be thinking, oh no, it's the wrong, like me. Oh, it was the wrong train. Hang on. Wait a minute. There might be a quicker one. Or this might be the slow one. It's gone. And your opportunity was gone. Thankfully, God is good. All the time. And in that train scenario, there was another fast one and I got on it. But it'd be awful if that was the last train of the night, wouldn't it? And you sort of stuck there. But anyway, we got the train and we got there. And sometimes we just have to be grateful you are in the right place. And you know, you are in the right place. You just have to be grateful and think, yeah, we're in the right place. And I chose to follow the God of my parents. You know, I look around and I think, yeah, they got it right. God had called them. They got it right. I've chosen to follow the God of my grandparents. You know, they got it right. And he is the God that I want to follow. Jesus is my Savior, my guide, my hope. And I've intertwined my life, interwoven my life with Jesus all the time. I'm not perfect, but I have chosen to intertwine my life with Jesus. And my hope is that all of us will choose to intertwine, to follow Jesus, to weave him into our lives. Yeah, we want to weave him in. That might be the title. We want to weave him into our lives. We have to choose God for ourselves. Choose him for ourselves. Can't just rely on, oh, well, it was my grandparents' God or my mum's God. You know, that'll do for me. It has to be our own choice. It has to be what we decide. And my son cannot rely upon dad's God. And that'll do for him. There comes a point when he will have to say, I want to intertwine God into my life. And I want to involve Jesus in my life. And I'll have to he'll have to say for himself. See, I can drag him along here now. And there'll come a point when he'll have to say, actually, I choose to follow Jesus. I choose to do this. I choose to do that. And it won't be me dragging him down here in the morning. It'll be his choice. And he'll have to choose that for the rest of his life to intertwine Jesus into his life and all of us. And it'll be my role to try and encourage him to intertwine Jesus into his life. So how I do that, you know, that remains to be seen. But that's part of our role here is trying to encourage our younger ones to intertwine their lives with Jesus. Or as you youngsters, or a few of you, to intertwine Jesus into your lives. Choose him for yourself. And really that's all I want to do. It's you can't rely on the God of your parents. It's got to be your own choice and it has to be your own decisions. And you have to walk with him thereafter. Okay? And if you want to ask me anything afterwards, please do. I'll pray. Father, I thank you for the prayers of my grandparents. I thank you for the prayers of my parents. I thank you for the prayers of family, of church, of friends that have helped me, Lord. And I bring this church to you, Lord, that we would help and encourage those young people with us, that we would pray for each other to walk and intertwine our lives with you, that we would want to walk with you, that we would want to involve you in our decisions, our thinking, our planning, the direction of where we go in righteous living. Lord, we'd ask that you would help us in that, Lord. And we'd ask that you would help us to find purpose and vision in what we do, whatever it is, whatever our role is, Lord, that we would serve you wherever we find ourselves in daily life, Lord, that we would live for you. In Jesus' name, amen.